We all have a neighbor or are a neighbor to someone else. We are to love our neighbors as we love ourselves, which at times is difficult at best. It's more difficult to love ourselves sometimes than others, you know. What I want to talk to you about today goes far deeper than just a mere thought or an emotional feeling. How does a person help another person they don't even really know? When the chips are down, so to speak. We all know or have known someone going through difficult times, whether it be emotional, economical. In fact, some of us have probably been there at a time or another. Remember, even strangers can and really are our neighbors. The case in point is the Good Samaritan. Please turn me, if you would, please, to Luke chapter 10. We'll begin in verse 25. This was testing Jesus. Behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tested him, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And he, Jesus, said to him, "What's written in the law?" He puts a question back to him. What is written in the law? Being a lawyer, he should know that. So he answered him, the lawyer, and said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." Then he said to him, Christ said, "You have answered correctly or rightly. Do this and you will live." But he, the lawyer, trying to justify, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Do we wonder who our neighbor is? We're neighbors in this world. We're all neighbors. Then Jesus answered and said, "A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothes, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down the road, and when he saw him, he went and passed on the other side of the street. He didn't want anything to do with him. And likewise, a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed on the other side as well. But a certain Samaritan, which was not really looked very favorably on by the Jews, as he journeyed, came where he was, the wounded man, and saw him and had compassion. So he went to him, bandaged his wounds, pouring oil and wine on, and set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. On the next day, when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper and said to him, 'Take care of him. And whatever more you spend, when I come again, I will repay you.'" Verse 36, asking the lawyer, "So which of these three do you think was a neighbor to him who fell among the thieves?" And the lawyer said, "He who showed mercy on him." Then Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." Well, my story isn't quite like that. No, I didn't fall into a den of thieves. But in the spring of 1956, I was a tender age of 10. On April 30, to be exact, when I was 10, my youngest brother was about 3 years old. Tragically, our house burned to the ground. It started out as a mild morning in April, mild for Oregon, you know. But still, it was a little slightly chilly. My father and a friend had gone earlier that morning to Southern Oregon, Northern California border, to retrieve a car that my dad had left there about a year ago. They were going to tow it back to or up to where we lived and put another engine in. The car, this is just little tidbits here, a 1939 Lincoln Zephyr. Originally came with a V12 engine. That engine wasn't really any good. It needed to be rebuilt. So my dad put a Ford V8 in it so they could drive it. This is probably around 1953, so the car was already old. It was already 14 years old. Some of us are driving cars that old right now, so it's nothing unusual. But in late 1953, our family ended up in Southern California, east of Los Angeles, a little town called Chino. If anybody's familiar with Southern California, that's where the women's prison is. So don't go there. So we left there sometime around December 1954, after being there, I'd say about a year and a half. Circumstances dictated my parents had to leave the Lincoln along with what would have been, I suppose, maybe an early conversion of a bus into a motorhome. Remember, this is 1955 by this time, 54. This is a 1935 Rio. We left Chino with my dad driving the motorhome, towing the Lincoln. My mother driving the other car, which is much more modern. It's a 1942 Dodge. Had been a taxi cab all during World War II and had probably about 500,000 miles on it. Obviously, they were old by those standards even. We did eventually make it back to Oregon on January. Oops, missed a page here. We did have an exciting trip, a few breakdowns along the way. We had to put a bucket under the engine to catch oil that leaked through it. We take the oil in the bucket and pour it back through it again. This is called a perpetual oil change. I did have a car one time. I'd go and say, check the gas and fill it up with oil. But we did eventually make it back to Oregon in January 1955. My mother was 30 and she cried all day because she's getting old. You may wonder what this has to do with being a good neighbor. Well, it really has everything. You see, we didn't have enough money to stay in a motel or someplace as such, but we did have the motorhome. When it broke down, we'd be able to get permission to park in somebody's side yard or a field and repair it. Any place to sleep, place to eat. The people we encountered were gracious and compassionate toward us, being yet strangers, but yet neighbors. Back to the original story. It had started out that mild morning, as I said before, just slightly chilly, my mother having a new baby, not wanting him to get cold or chilly, because we didn't have central heat or air then. Started a small fire in the stove in the living room to take the chill out of the air. But unknown to her, the flue caught fire. Our next door neighbor, which lived in a house that had been an old house, and the house had been moved next to us about 3 years before. That was quite a sight, seeing a house coming down the road, but it worked. Again, a good neighbor was washing dishes. People used to wash dishes in their sinks, you know. And noticed the fire coming out of the chimney at about 9 a.m., she ran over to let my mother know the house was on fire. She was able to get my older brother, and who was less than 3 years old, and my youngest brother, and herself out of the house. The house was a total loss, burning completely to the ground with only the chimney standing. I didn't find out about this until late in the afternoon when I got home. When I started to get off the bus, and the bus driver asked me a very, very strange question, at least I thought it was at the time. And he says, where are you going to sleep tonight? Well, he was being a good neighbor. I was an impetuous 10-year-old, okay? And told him, in my bed, of course. Where would I think I'd sleep? In my bed, of course. I didn't know the story yet. Well, I had been reading a book and still reading as I got off the bus. I just got into reading, and everything I got my hands on, I could read. So I'm walking off the bus and up to the house, up to the gate. I open the gate and look up. There's no house. Everything is gone. Yeah, fear goes through you, you know. I didn't know what to think. We didn't have a phone. My mother didn't have any way of letting me know unless she could come to the school. My dad had the only car we had to go pick up the other one. I was safe. My mother was safe. My brothers were safe. And my dad being out of town, it was hard to get a hold of him. A lot of people didn't have phones back in those days, like they do now. And then, on top of that, my mother looking for some place to live. Not long after I got home, she arrived and let me know what had happened. We were told because some of the walls had been filled with honeybees, the wax in the walls made the fire so hot that the house was burned to a total loss in a half an hour. They were lucky anybody got alive, out alive. The next few days was like a whirlwind. Nights were spent with friends or family. And life went on as close to normal as possible. My dad got home later that night without the Lincoln. It may still be sitting in someone's field, waiting to be resurrected. Who knows? I'd like to find it. The community, our neighbors, all pulled together, and they found a house. Excuse me. They cleaned it. They papered it. They did use wallpaper back then. Terrible stuff. There was furniture donated, clothes collected. My mother had her first electric stove. Now, there was a wood stove on one side of the kitchen and the electric stove on the other side of the kitchen. It took her some time to get used to using that electric stove. She'd put something on there and get fed up with it and go use the wood stove. We had four rooms, had a living room and a kitchen. It was a combined kitchen-dining room. And my parents' room was shared with my youngest brother, and my other brother and I shared the other room. We all shared one bathroom. It's called an outhouse. Life was good, thanks to our good neighbors. Remember what James says, what it says in James 2:15. If a brother or sister, let's turn there, we've got time. James 2, beginning in verse 15. If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to him, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them things which are needed for the body, what profit is it? Yes, you should use a word of caution here in determining between real need and being scammed. We live in a different world than we did 60-some years ago. Yes, we do have a responsibility to be a good neighbor. If we're going to talk the talk, we need to walk the walk. I've got a question for you. What makes a good neighbor?